before I get started with my sermon, I would like all the women here to stand. All women. And children women, young women, girls, children women. Anyone of the female persuasion. So I want to tell you how much we appreciate you. We appreciate our mothers, of course. This is Mother's Day. But we also appreciate all of our women. You help in more ways than you can imagine. I know that in centuries past, you have not been fully appreciated. Nowadays, in the modern age, you help us by leading also, which is important and significant. But I want you to know how much you are appreciated for all that you do, for the ways in which you help us to understand the meaning of love and the meaning of expressing love. And sometimes the other gender tends to forget that a little bit. And you help us with that in so many ways. You are there to help families and society, of course, but also, very importantly, the life and the work of the church. And I know that you understand that without our women in the life and the work of the church, we would get some things done, but not nearly as much as we get with you. So thank you so much. I wanted to pay my respects to you and the whole church, and let's let everybody else give you a hand. So come be seated. So Paul had a vision. It's just a marvelous statement. During the night, he had a vision. It's a powerful thing. He had a vision. This man standing there, the man saying, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." What a powerful vision. What a powerful statement that Paul understood. This is what I'm supposed to do. This is God speaking to me through the people of Macedonia, saying, "We need your help. We need you to come here and to bring us the great and glorious good news." Paul understood that a part of his calling, the major part of it, was to be the missionary to the Gentiles, to the Gentile world, to the Jewish world for sure, but he realized that God meant for the gospel to be the good news for all the world. And so Paul went about bringing the news to the Gentile world as well. And so when he gets his vision, he understands the importance of it. He understands what he must do. And so it says that they tried to go there. Now, if you're like me, if I ever said to my teacher or my mother that I was going to try, you probably got a little bit of a rebuke. Don't try, get it done. Don't try, don't say, "Well, I'll try." It's sort of a weak response. Most of the time, you prefer someone to say, "I will do that." And then if they have problems, they can come back and say, but you want them to have that kind of attitude. "I will take care of it. I will do it. It's done. Consider it accomplished," you know, that sort of thing. But the scripture says, we tried to set sail. It's such an interesting statement, such an interesting point of view. And it shows indeed that even though Paul, being a very strong, dominant type person, even Paul, with the vision that he had received from God, from Matt, the man in Macedonia, saying, "Come and help us," even with that, the best he could do was to try. But he did accomplish it. He was able to do that. They set sail and they did this. But Paul needed help. He couldn't do it alone. It was not something that Paul could say, "I'm going to Macedonia. See y'all later." I mean, he might have tried to do that, but it probably wouldn't have worked. So when they said, "We tried," it was like Paul was intent on going. Paul knew he had to go. Those around him knew they had to go. But there were obstacles in the way, and there were issues, and there were concerns, and you had to organize it, and you had to get things ready for it and everything else. So it wasn't something you could just do, even though you had the vision to do it, even though you had that to do it. And I think in a lot of ways that our mothers and women in general help us, help each and every one of us, women, men, children, youth, help us all to understand that if we have a vision, then we need help in order to fulfill that vision. And the help is there. And the help is there. And the help believes that you can accomplish it. When I was in the first grade, my mother had a very close friend who was also a teacher. And she taught swimming lessons in her dad's great big swimming pool. Swimming pools back then were rare, so it was real nice that she had this great big swimming pool in her backyard. So in the summer, she would teach swimming lessons to different children and all, and her pool would be just about packed with children because they loved to swim in the swimming pool, but then also she was there to teach swimming lessons, so she was accomplishing a good thing. Well, we were in first grade, my brother and me, my twin brother, and so we were there, and we took swimming lessons from her, and she was a very good teacher, and she was very good at what she did, but one day she came to us, and she said, okay, she said, I want y'all to hold your nose and sit down on the bottom and count to 100. And my brother and I looked at each other, and we, first grade, we knew how to count to 100. That part we could do, I think, but anyway, but the other part, go down to the bottom and hold your breath to count to 100. I was going, one, two, three. We looked at each other. We said, no. You know, we weren't used to telling adults no, but we weren't even going to try. We were like, no, can't do that. So then she kept doing other things and went on. So the next day she asked the same thing. Oh, dang, now go down to the bottom and count to 100. No, can't, not going to do it. Not going to happen. Sorry, just not something we're going to do. We got to be sort of a little joke until finally she realized what she needed to do. And you probably already figured this out. She realized that it was one thing for her to say, go down the bottom and sit there and hold your nose and count to 100. But she went down with us. She said, let me show you. And so we went down. I think she counted by tens, but anyway, she did it, and then we came up, and everything was good. She had to be there with us. She had to help us see that something she felt was important for us to accomplish, the ability to hold her breath and do that, was important, that was her vision for how we would continue to learn not to be afraid of the water, but that she had to be there with us. She had to go down there with us and show us this is not impossible. You can do it. So that is a gift, I believe, that women have that they can give to other women, give to other people as well, a gift of showing that the vision is given to you by God, and that we are standing beside you. We will make sure that that vision is done. And then, of course, I always find it fascinating that when he got there, of course, his custom was that if there wasn't a synagogue in the city where he went to, that they knew that the Jews, if there wasn't a synagogue there, that they on the Sabbath morning, on Saturday morning, they would gather by the river, or whatever river was there, they would gather there to do their worship. It was their custom. And so Paul knew that there wasn't a synagogue there, and so they went to the river on that Saturday morning, because his method that he used was to start with the Jewish community, to try to convert those there, and then to reach out to the other Gentiles. It was his way of getting it started. And it also led him into trouble with the Jewish community as well, when they realized that he was not just there to, you know, help them and teach them more Jewish things, but he was actually converting them to Christianity. And so that's why he got imprisoned and flogged and thrown out and all this other stuff and life threatened and all that. So he went there, gathered back there by the river, and the Bible said that he sat down and started talking with the women who were there. It doesn't say anything about the men. And I would say that probably means there weren't any men there. It was all women. Isn't that amazing? It was just like this Jewish community gathered there to worship, and it was all women. And the Jewish faith back then was very centered around the men, of course. But the women were there, and so Paul was like, "Look, that's fine. That's good. I'll be there, and I will certainly let them know that this is what I'm all about." And so he started speaking with them about the good news of Jesus Christ, the Messiah, who had come. He brought that message first to the women because they were there. They were there in the midst of this. They were there at this life-changing moment for them, for their community, for the Gentiles and the Jews in that area. They were there. Presence. Presence is so important. presence is a gift that we can give. It's a gift that women give so readily. You know, women are there in the midst of trials and tribulations. Women are there when things are going great and celebrating. Women are there to support. Women are there to make sure that those who are feeling lonely know that there are others around them. And I'm sure that you have many instances when you can remember when your mom was there for you, or another important lady, a teacher, a member of the church, someone in your neighborhood, there for you when you needed them to be there. Moms have a marvelous way of doing that. When I was in first grade as well, our little old school, it's torn down now, but it was old when I was there, and it was one of those red brick schools, big wide hallways and transoms over the doors and whole big windows about that size that they would open because there was no air conditioning and radiators and all of that, and had a bell on top of the building. And I loved that school. And the cafeteria had screen doors inside the building because all the windows opened. The windows didn't have screens, so the flies would come in. So the cafeteria had screen doors. And we would rotate who had the responsibility of holding the screen door open as the class exited the lunchroom. And so that day, I was holding the screen door. And it was also the day that parents were invited to come by the school, just drop by and see the class, see their children in class, and sort of greet them, the teacher greet them, and then the parents left. It wasn't any big program thing or anything. Well, I understood. My mom taught high school, which was just a block away, but she taught high school, so she was in class. My dad was running his business. A lot of times, he would be the only one there until after school was out, and then some other people would be there to help him. But he was there alone. He couldn't close his business. So it was a given that no one was coming for us for Parents' Day to just greet us and talk with the teacher and that sort of thing. And so I was standing there holding the screen door, and it was right near the front doors of the building. And about that time, my mother walked through the front doors. And I was shocked. I wasn't expecting her to be there. I thought it was a given that she wasn't going to be there. And she walked in, and of course, it was right by the office, and so the office staff, they all knew her and everything. So they all came out and started talking to her and everything. And I was so overwhelmed, I stepped too far, and the screen door slammed shut in the front of the children, hit one kid in the nose and everything else. And the teacher was like, what, what's going on? I was like, my mommy, she's here, you know. It just meant everything to me that she had obviously gone to the trouble to have somebody watch her class so she could come over there and just be there for us. And I remember that. Isn't that crazy? It's amazing how many times, I'm sure, hopefully right now, that you're remembering when your mom or someone else was there for you. Right at that time, maybe when you weren't expecting it, maybe when you were most wanting it. But when they are there for us, that presence means so much. The women were there to worship God. And who would have thought, the men playing hooky or whatever they were doing, who would have thought that on that day, Paul would have been there to fulfill the vision that he had and to make all the difference, to make all the difference in their lives and the lives of the world. And then, of course, he meets a lady who is there who is a worshiper of God. That means that she is not a Jewish lady, that she was what they called a God-fearer, that she was there worshiping God. She could have been converted into the Jewish faith, but a lot of times if you were not born Jewish, you could be a God-fearer and they brought you in and let you be a part of worship, but that you were not Jewish. And so she had standing in the Jewish community, and she was there, Lydia, and she was a dealer in purple. I love that, a dealer in purple. Actually, that meant that she was a snail squeezer. Perhaps you've heard of that, but a dealer in purple then was someone who would take the murex snails that were found in that region, and if you squeeze the murex snail, then one tiny drop of this dye would come out, and this dye was highly valued. It said that the dye could be sold for its weight in silver, which silver was all the rage then. So could be sold for its weight in silver. And so people who were dealers in purple had a great wealth, generally speaking. Now you can imagine how many snails you had to squeeze to get very much to make it worth your while. So also the dealers in purple tended to have a lot of capital because it took a lot of capital to set up this business and have it running and everything. It was the dye that was produced was, we would call it a deep red instead of purple, but it was considered purple. That was what it was called. And the nice thing about it is, you know, and probably it would still be valued today, but the deep red, the color that would be dyed into the cloth, that the more you washed it, the more you wore it, the deeper the color got. It became richer in color instead of fading as modern dyes tend to do. That dye tended to get richer. So another reason why it was so highly valued and treasured. So this lady, who obviously had great wealth and able to do this, a dealer in purple, then she was there and she prevailed on them. She said, you know, if you found me faithful in the Lord, then let me do this for you. Come and be at my house and let me be your means of support. Now, this is significant. Lydia is only mentioned here in the Bible, but obviously it's an important thing that she did because everywhere else that Paul went, he supported himself while he was there. He was a tent maker. It was a tent maker ministry. He made the goat hair tents, which were also highly valued and everything. The goat hair was valued for tents because the goat hair would shrink and expand based on heat and humidity, so that like if it was hot, the goat hair would expand and would allow the tent to breathe, and then if it started raining, the goat hair would contract and make it waterproof. So again, you go, wow, they had neat things back then, but that was what it did. So that's why he could bring in and be a goat hair tent maker and earn a living there. But while he's staying with Lydia, he does not work toward the tent making because Lydia is supporting him. Lydia is there to give him what he needs to make sure he can do it. So he wasn't having to be part-time evangelist. He could be full-time evangelist while he was there, full-time person bringing the good news. She prevailed against him and made these things possible, which is very important. And it's important indeed in our lives how much our moms also prevail upon us at times. And at times, just as Lydia changed the direction of Paul's ministry while he was there in Macedonia, our moms sometimes change the course of our lives as well by prevailing upon us. I remember the Sunday that I was going to my very first appointment for the very first time, John Wesley United Methodist Church in Anderson. I was going there on that Sunday morning to preach my first sermon. It was the second sermon I'd ever preached in my life, the first sermon being in a preaching class at seminary. And I'd finished 1 year of seminary. Now I was pastor of Homeland Park, John Wesley United Methodist Churches. And I was driving into the parking lot there at John Wesley, and all I could think of was, I can't possibly do this. There's no way I can stand up in front of these people and preach to them as their brand new pastor, preacher. And I was terrified. And I remember as I was starting into the driveway, I said, I can't do this. And all of a sudden I heard my mother's voice. And it was loud and clear because mother would not accept it if we said, I can't do this. She would say, of course you can. Can't never could. And then she would continue. It wouldn't stop with just those statements. So it was drilled into my mind. And so as I was turning in there and I was going, I can't do this, I heard my mother's voice, of course you can. Can't never could. You can do anything you set your mind on doing. Some of her favorite phrases. And of course, when I heard her saying that in my mind, I knew I could do it. And I could do it with great enthusiasm and with great understanding and with understanding of myself that my mom gave to me as well. That is, I think, the ministry of moms prevailing upon us to show us the paths that we can take, the paths we will take, the paths that we will succeed in taking because moms believe in us. And women, that is true for you as well, that you prevail upon us. At annual conference years ago, decades ago, the United Methodist women always do a great job of presenting all the ways in which the United Methodist women in our annual conference and around the world are great, heavy supporters of the Board of Global Ministries, the missions, worldwide missions of the church, and domestic and statewide missions as well. And so one year for the United Methodist Women's Report, they had about six ladies stand in the great arena. We were at Walford's Arena then and in front of all these people. And these six ladies stood, and each one was holding a papier-mâché mask of some person that they were representing, some ministry they were representing. And you would go, well, that's nice, except the papier-mâché masks were gigantic. They were probably about two sizes of the person. And that way they could be seen all over the arena. And, of course, they were papier-mâché, so they weren't heavy. So they were holding these masks, and then each one was mic'd. And in turn, they would talk about who they were, how the United Methodist women had been in ministry to them, and, even more importantly, what the United Methodist women were planning to do to be in ministry to them. And so one after another, these women would identify themselves not only with their mask, but with their words, stating the work of United Methodist women in the mission of the church. And I've always remembered that. Now, if you ask me what the United Methodist Women's report was last year, I'll probably have to go, I think I remember. But that one really stuck in my mind because it was the face of the people that the women had touched and prevailed upon. I think the message that is here for us is that women help us to understand you take your gifts, you take what God has given to you, and you offer them to the world. You use them for the betterment of the world. And then, indeed, great things are accomplished. Let us pray.